Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast.
Serotalk Podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle.
www.serotalk.com.
A production of Serotech Corporation, creators of System Access, the System Access Mobile Network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Michael Loft.
Welcome to Serotalk Podcast number 21. This is Michael Loft.
And I'm Ricky Inger.
And a new voice, not only to the podcast, but to Serotech Corporation. What's up, buddy?
Hi, y'all. Buddy Brandon here.
Y'all.
Originally from Texas, but now in beautiful and hysterical Erie, Pennsylvania, where they don't say y'all. Or fixin' to, either.
Tell our users about yourself.
I'm passionate about technology like everybody else here at Serotalk, and if it plugs in or runs on batteries, I'm probably excited about it. A ham radio operator, my call is KB5ELV, I kept the 5 from Texas. Married, have a daughter, when you call Serotech on the phone, you might talk to me.
Coming up in the podcast today, Tom Schill did an interview in nothing less than the mall in Clearwater, Florida, with David Przinski, who has a business called Back to Business. He was a psychologist and retrained himself in massage therapy. Works down in the Clearwater, Dunedin area of Florida. And he has a website of yourbackourbusiness.com. Massage practice in the mall with 3 chairs and kind of does the upper body work. And then people need more specific work and travel to their office. He is blind and has some visually impaired as well as sighted staff members and has been doing it now for 12 years. Also coming up, we're going to rebroadcast this interview Jamie Pauls did with the one and only Ricky Inger talking about accessible events, so you may have heard about it. If you want to get up to speed on exactly what it is and what it can do for your business or university or some meeting that you need to orchestrate. I did an interview with Dale Campbell and Cheryl Cummings with the show that airs on ACB Radio, as well as a number of radio reading services called Cooking in the Dark.
Excellent show. I enjoy cooking in the dark myself, so I like to listen to us who do the same.
I think you just volunteered yourself, because I asked who is going to, from our podcast, come on their show and cook up some eats.
Well, I think it'd be more entertaining to watch you burn stuff.
Hey, I may not be a great cook, but I don't burn food.
Well, all right, then.
I'll never
so
say
it
never.
Stays
but
frozen.
No. Well, let's just say I've never had a meal totally unedible. Yeah, I did maybe have to dispose of part of it. So, okay, you win. A lot of news to cover here. Not a lot, but some interesting things. GW Micro has released a public beta of the BookSense version 1.1, and I'm going to defer to Buddy because he owns the BookSense. It just says here some bug fixes.
Yeah, it really is just a bug fix release. They haven't added any new features. You know, of course, they're looking for feedback still because there are still some little things that people have reported. BookSense now is recognized by the Mac, so that was a big one. They're working on sort of the place markers in the Daisy Reader with NLS books didn't reliably keep its place. I think that's better, but people are still reporting that there are still some things going with that. RFBND support and that sort of all that stuff, that's not coming until later.
Overall, though, are you generally pretty happy with the BookSense?
Oh, yeah, I love it. I've, of course, not only been reading books on it, but I've been doing some recording on it.
I don't know how many of you remember Playback and the Playback Underground magazines by Ed Potter. From 1979 to 2007, over 385 hours of them now available in MP3 format that persons can download. Go over to bluegrasspals.com, just like it sounds, bluegrasspals.com/playback, and there's also an FTP site if you want to go ahead and try to pull down all episodes of that. And people can eventually purchase them on CD-ROM. They'll be making that available in the future. And Salona.net, the CAPTCHA service, where you can submit your CAPTCHAs and have a human actually read it and send the info back to you. Bernard Maldonado needs your help. He's been doing it on his own with just a very few volunteers and has decided that sleep is essential. So until some more volunteers can be found, it will be closed down between the hours of central time of 11 p.m. and 6:30 a.m. or midnight to 7:30 or so Eastern. So he's asking each of the 1,000 people who have registered on the site if they could just ask one-sided volunteer to maybe come in a little bit each week that they could get this service manned. Certainly he can't do it every waking moment as well. if you know someone, especially maybe listeners over in Australia, New Zealand, or maybe in the UK, you know, early birds in the UK that could come in around 5 or 6 in the morning, you know, when it's just midnight here in the States, certainly that would be appreciated to keep that service going 24/7, because I can only guess that it's going to increase in popularity in the future as more people learn about it and begin using it.
It is not browser specific, so regardless of which browser you're using, you're going to be able to submit your CAPTCHA to Celona and get a result.
My Celona.
I spoke with Bernard Maldonado, and I sort of remember singing that to him, and I don't know if he laughed to be polite or otherwise, but he thought it was funny, or at least pretended to.
Maybe you have enough eyesight yourself to participate in that. Certainly go to Celona.net, and there's information on how you can volunteer and get involved in that process. I posted something I thought kind of interesting in the Socializer. It follows up on our previous discussion on the BrainPort, a slightly different technology called BCI, or Brain Computer Interface, and not really designed for blind folks. What this does is it was designed to help stroke victims or those suffering from ALS or Lou Gehrig's disease. The ability to control the computer with their thoughts, and it's not quite as advanced as you might think. I mean, basically, it shows letters on the screen, and when they see one that's the letter for the word they're trying to ultimately spell out, they think that one and that letter is applied. So it takes about 20 seconds per character. But it showed a very accomplished gentleman using it, going on pretty big in Pennsylvania, other parts in the country as well. But the research is kind of being kept quiet, at least until this segment on 60 Minutes. So very interesting. It is in the Socializer. Of course, you can go to the 60 Minutes podcast. And finally here, TomTom for the iPhone app is now available in the App Store. Who's going to buy it first? I'm going to take dibs on Mike Calvo. Maybe you, Ricky? I don't know.
It may very well be me. By the way, Navigon did update the mobile navigator software last week and introduced a couple of new features. For example, the ability to look at points of interest along your route. You can do that pretty easily now with the mobile navigator software. And now TomTom is out, and it's definitely worth a look. Price tag on that is $99, as mobile navigator now is. Given that we've passed August 15th, that price has now increased from $69 to $99, and that's exactly what TomTom is going for as well.
Yes, $99 in the U.S. and Canada. Western Europe, $139.99. Australia, $79.99. UK, £59.59. U.S. and Canadian maps, 1.21 gig, and Western Europe, 1.44. And it includes 6 million points of interest and a number of other features. So, you know, send us an email, resources at serotalk.com, or call the Blab line at 866-997-BLAB to give us your 2 cents on what you've been able to do with ZTomTom. Well, as discussed before on Serotalk, one of the things we like to do is promote other great quality podcasts produced by blind and low vision folk, covering a wide variety of topics. And here's a good one. It's called Cooking in the Dark. And we have here the hosts of this great podcast, Dale Campbell.
Hey, what's going on, y'all?
If it didn't know better, I think you're in Texas. And
yeah.
And we have Tim Cummings.
Actually, I'm the producer. The co-host is my wife, who's right here, who can say hi to you. Cheryl?
Hi, this is Cheryl, the co-host.
Cheryl, the co-host, and Tim, you're strictly the producer. Does that mean you stay out of the kitchen? Is that what you're saying? Or?
No, not totally, but I do all the knob twiddling. Post-production.
Nothing like knob twiddling and editing. Good times.
It's a great team effort to produce the show. I mean, each show takes, goodness, from start to finish. I'd say, you know, if you add in the shopping trip to the store and deciding on the recipes, probably a good 8 hours to do. We get it all reduced down into 1 hour between going and shopping and finding out what we're going to do and then getting prepped for the show and getting the show recorded. And then Tim goes in and does his magic stuff. Man, out the other end pops out this excellent cooking show for the blind.
People just don't realize what it takes to do a quality show. I mean, anybody can just sit down and start recording and take what you get, throw it up, no edits or anything.
Yeah, even a show like this that's, you know, basically just all talk, it's still a lot of production work to get it going. But then you add in, you know, having to go to the store and buy the product and get home and get them set up and get the studio ready and then get everything prepped. And it's a lot of work. There's a few other cooking shows we've heard. You know, people sit around and talk about cooking, but I'm Cooking in the Dark, man, we make the bacon sizzle and the pots bang.
Maybe one of these days we'll have a sense of smell. I've heard that technology is out there where we can actually smell the food that you're preparing.
Woo, that'd be awesome, man, because I tell you what, already you'll gain 5 pounds just listening to the show, huh, Cheryl?
Absolutely. Our caveat says we're not responsible for any weight gain.
When did you first realize you had the love to cook?
Oh, I've always had it. I mean, I was a bachelor all my life. I lost my eyesight in a car wreck when I was 30, and I'd been living on my own since I was a freshman in college. From smoking, throwing something on the pit, you know, grilling, cooking it. I didn't get to be 6'4 and 265, mean and nasty for nothing, you know?
So what was the first meal you ever remember? What's the one that stands out like, wow, I made this and it was pretty darn good?
Probably the best thing I ever made when I was sighted, I did some pork chops on the grill real slow, just kept turning them during the day and seasoning them, and boy, they just melted in your mouth. But the first thing I remember after I lost my sight doing was frying bacon. I'd fried bacon for years. I knew how to fry it. I didn't know how to fry it blind. You know, I quickly learned, man, I about burnt my kitchen down.
How long did it take you from the time you lost your sight before you got up the nerve to fire up the skillet?
Probably about 3 months.
Cheryl, what made you decide to get into co-hosting a cooking show?
Like Dale, I lost my sight, not in an accident, but due to encephalitis. And I've just always done it. I mean, I like sort of tinkering around in the kitchen. And when Tim told me that there was a chance to do this, I thought that's fantastic because I used to work at the state agency for the blind. And by going on some of the trips with the rehabilitation teachers, I got a chance to see how sort of tenuous a lot of folks who are going through vision loss are when it comes to cooking. And I was just so excited to have a chance to be involved. I mean, with somebody like Dale, and just this whole idea that it's nothing to be terrified about. Even though you can't see, you can still experiment and you can still enjoy moving around in a kitchen. You just have to figure out some different ways of doing it. I was very excited to get involved.
Yeah, you don't need sight to cook a tasty delight.
Blind Mice Smart, I know you sell a variety of things, and I'm curious when you got into that and maybe some specific items that you sell that are really great for those who like to piddle in the kitchen.
Blind Mice Smart started back in 2003 after a trip to the mall. I got met with such crazy stupidity and ignorance. I was like, you know what? There's got to be a better way. So Blind Mice Smart is fixing the blow up and become blindmicemegamart.com. But man, we sell gifts, collectibles, we sell adaptive products for the blind, Braille cookbooks. We've got over 131 titles, all different categories, and the same Braille cookbooks are available in electronic format. As far as for the kitchen, I've got some contracts with different cooking suppliers or cookware suppliers, and most of the products are not adaptive, although I would say the adaptive things, probably the coolest ones, Cheryl, the talking cooking thermometer.
The ID
Mate. The talking
mate.
Timer. The ID Mate is by far the best. Portable talking barcode reader by Envision America that we handle through Blind Mice, and we sell it at about $100 off and we give you free shipping. So our goal is, let's get this stuff into your hands where you can use it. I mean, you will set yourself free with the ID Mate. A nylon knife, which is like a nylon chef's knife that you can't cut yourself with, but that dude will slice up fruit, it'll cut ribs, it'll cut brisket. I've done it. And you can't really cut yourself because it's made out of nylon. Originally, it's a lettuce knife, and it's made to cut lettuce so that when you slice lettuce, it won't oxidize and turn brown on you, you know, when it's waiting to be served. We have some flexible chopping mats.
Don't forget the kitchen grips.
The kitchen grips, oven mitts.
Oh, those are awesome. I saw those at Mike Cabo's house.
They've been upgraded over the ones that Mike has because now they're waterproof as well. If you have the desire to stick your hand in a boiling pot of water, you can do it. When we get these products in, if they're cool, we're going to talk about them. On the show we just recently recorded, we introduced the Patty Caddy, a little device for making perfect hamburger patties. Super simple, super easy to use, and it's like $10, I think. Just all types of little gadgets that we find, and if we get something that's a pain to use, you're not going to see it at Blind Mice Smart. We're going to send a dude packing.
You talked about the trips to go out and get the groceries for the items that you prepare. Do you buy anything online, or is it strictly travels to local markets?
No, I don't have the, man, Tim and Cheryl, they get to be the lazy bodies and use Peapod, you know, for groceries.
We are being very efficient. Do not.
Cheryl, I'll tell you what line I'd be in. Peapod. You know where I'd be. We used to have Peapod in Houston, and they discontinued the service. I get a ride to the grocery store, and I had, up until recently when she quit, a regular shopper that would help me shop. And it was nice because she knew what I wanted, and she was a chef herself, so she helped me from the store. It was great. I mean, she was always turning me on to new vegetables, new this, new that, new ways to try stuff. And that was really cool, too, while we shop. I just walk in there, cruise in there with my guide dog. He takes me right up to the customer service counter. I've got the ID Mate looped under my arm, and they hook us up, and away we go. You know, we're creatures of habit. There's a lot of the same stuff we buy over and over again, so it's in the ID Mate. Stuff that may not be in there, a new product or a new line or a store line. I mean, when I get home, I can scan the can and identify what it is. I don't have to depend on anybody helping me put it up. I don't have to spend 8 or 9 hours labeling with Braille. I mean, I just go in, tell them what I want, they grab it, we scan it. If I know it's in the scanner, we put it in the cart and move on. The ID Mate, y'all, I mean, getting back to that again, it's an awesome, awesome product. Once you get one, you'll wonder, like, how the heck did I live without it?
Opposite to Dale is that Tim and I haven't been in a supermarket for many, many years. We use Peapod to do most of our grocery ordering. And as Dale said, we are creatures of habit. One of the nice things about Peapod is you develop the list, and you have a list of your previous orders, or you could do the super duper list that's everything you've ever ordered from the store. And I love it because not only can you click on an item, there's a description, and Tim actually went a step further than I did, and he found that it gave you sort of the directions on how to prepare certain things you were buying, the nutritional value of everything. That's been like really fantastic.
And the great thing about Peapod is you go online, you can either, like Cheryl said, order off your past shopping lists. Bam, 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 you got stuff in your cart. You want to search for something new or some rare ingredient you need for this other recipe, do it. 2% of your order and $5 or something for them to shop and deliver it.
Yeah.
And then they'll put it away if you want them to. I'm in. I'll play.
Well, that's very nice. Yeah, we have a store here called Schnucks, but they charge like a flat $12.50 whether you spend $10 or $1,000. And I do notice that certain things aren't available on the website.
The thing I've recently noticed about Peapod is they're actually now offering like web specials, which I thought was really cool because so many times I think, oh, we're missing out on that because we don't clip coupons or any of these things.
Peapod.com. Check it out. If it's not in your area, they ask you to enter your zip code, but if it's not in your area, you can request. You know, and I guess if they get enough interest in an area, they'll add it. It's the way to go for grocery shopping. And plus, if you get something and you don't want it, they'll return it. They'll take it back, or if something doesn't look good, but I never once had bad vegetables or anything from them.
That was one of my questions for you, Dale, is any tips you'd give our listeners for gauging the freshness of fruits, vegetables, and meats when you're in the store?
Tons of different ways. A lot of them are visual, but depending on who's helping you shop, if it's somebody from the store. Now, that's something else. When we go shopping at the store, I don't take who they give me. I want a checker, or I want somebody from the grocery department. I don't want one of the little sackers, you know, that just got out of high school, rode his bike to the store, that doesn't shop and doesn't know anything about groceries or cooking. They have to accommodate you. I mean, the grocery store is going to give you the least expendable person that they can give you. For us blind people, we need somebody that can look. We need somebody that can reason. This product is $4.99. This one's $3.99 on sale. It's the same thing. It's a better deal. And express that to you, you know. So don't let them get away with that nonsense. I ask them, like, if I buy salmon, I'll ask them to describe what it looks like. Meats, I usually go right to the butcher. I ask him to take me to the butcher and have him help me either find the stuff or cut it for me. If I know I want a particular type of steak or ribs, they're really good about helping you out. It just depends on the fruit or vegetable. And in that sense, I think the best thing for you to do is, as the shopper, is educate yourself. You know, go online. And I was doing research for an eggplant show, and I found out that you want an eggplant that's real purple. You don't want one with brown spots on it. Where the stem connects to it, if it's round, it's a male plant. If it's oval, it's a female plant. You want the female plant because they have less seeds, yada. I mean, just all this information was on the internet. I was like, wow.
Even though somebody's helping you shop, don't be afraid to say, I'd like to try picking that out myself.
Oh, totally.
Because part of being able to choose your vegetables and your fruit is that you know the feel. Between the person who's helping you and you, you should be able to, I think, select pretty good fruits and vegetables.
Yeah, yeah, like bananas. I always want bananas that are a little green at the stem with a little bit of the green going into the banana. So this lasts a few more days. Don't be afraid to tell somebody, no, I don't want this.
Right.
You know, don't be afraid to say no. This is not acceptable.
Just say no.
You know? Just say
no. Tell me
no.
Related I mean, to Nancy Reagan or something.
You know, one of the things on the cooking in the dark email list that came across, somebody asked how somebody knew the expiration date of their dairy. You know, everybody was like, we asked. And there were actually some folks that were too meek to even ask what the expiration date was. I mean, that's something we try to do on the cooking show. We have a lot of fun. We tell a lot of bad jokes. You know, I try to give some crazy tips as we go through the show and examples. And we're actually sitting there doing the recipe. I mean, if there's ever a show where somebody's still a little confused or didn't understand what was going on, gosh, just shoot us an email, you know? We'll be glad to try to help you out or explain it a little further.
Using any online resources, either to get new recipes or any sites you can recommend, like you said, we're just getting cooking instructions?
There's a ton of sites out there. A lot of times when I'm looking just for a general recipe, general information, I'll just Google it. Come up with two or three places that I can go find what I need. There's like a cooking thesaurus and a cooking encyclopedia website, which are pretty good. Don't be afraid to Google something. But man, as far as recipes, woo! The cooking in the dark list, that's all you need.
The people on this list are so knowledgeable. Like a few days ago, I saw somebody sent out a thing looking for a chunky tomato soup recipe. I swear, within 10, 15 minutes, there were, you know, simple chunky tomato soup recipe. Gourmet chunky tomato soup.
If you have any questions or if you have any needs for a recipe or any of that, members all over the globe, literally. I mean, from Australia, New Zealand, all the way up on top of Canada, people in Israel, we've got people in the Caribbean, we've got folks in Germany and England. Sometimes you'll see a recipe posted from somebody from a European country or from down under, and of course, terminology is different, so that's always neat to look at.
Now, how do you advise someone who's getting started? You start maybe with some simpler crock pot or microwave recipes just to get their confidence up?
Crock pot is excellent. Microwave is excellent. Electric skillet is excellent. Cooking on the stovetop is excellent. I would say probably one of the best things to do for a learning cook would be to learn how to brown meat, be it hamburger, be it sausage, be it turkey, you know, ground meat. And from there, you can really expand into a lot of different recipes. You know how to brown meat, you can, you know, pretty soon you could elevate yourself to be making homemade enchiladas or chili or even something simple, brown some hamburger meat and make you a box of, you know, macaroni and cheese.
But I know there's the whole art of kind of telling by the sound when the meat's finished, or I notice kind of when the smell gets to its strongest and kind of subsides, it's usually a good cue to
me. Some recipes you cook for smell, some it's for feel. I mean, hamburger meat or meat, when you're browning it, it gets real crumbly. It gets less like Play-Doh. I mean, bacon or sausage, if you're frying that in a skillet, when you start hearing the sizzling diminishing, you know you're getting close. And the other big thing is by touch. Literally, I mean, we joke about it, but stick a fork in it, see if it's done. If you can have somebody that'll help you, like do a chicken breast, you can tell after a while, all right, this is a raw one, and stick it and poke it a few times, and then this is a cooked one. And you can definitely tell a difference in the texture pretty much with any food.
Oh, it's certainly like chops and steak or chicken where the meat just falls off the bone. You know you're good.
Throw it in the smoker. Oh, yeah. Come back 3 hours later, drink a beer. Oh. I like putting stuff on the smoker.
When you're first venturing into the kitchen, just know that everybody makes mistakes.
Yeah, don't worry about screwing up, man. Everybody does it. And don't play off as, oh, blame it on the blindness. I'll be insulted.
Oh,
yeah.
No, I've had many a screwed up meal from a sightling.
Oh, yeah.
You need to sort of really know that. Other folks around you may panic. They'll be like, oh my God, what do you mean you're in the kitchen? You know, it's your kitchen. And don't let people like fool you. Me? Have a fire? That's so false too. I mean, stuff happens.
But that's something we try to do on the show too. As we're doing stuff, I try to describe how I'm cutting or slicing or what I'm doing or how I'm flipping this or turning this. And the whole point is, in the kitchen, you need safety and you need awareness. They go hand in hand. You know, I've heard a story of a person that caught themselves on fire because they were in a robe with real baggy arms and it brushed across the fire of the stove and caught on fire. And next thing, they were on fire. You know, and that was just lack of awareness. Man, if you got big baggy sleeves, you don't need to be around an open flame. Some shows will do very simple stuff. You know, like last week's show, flat tire casserole. We had a flat tire. We couldn't get to the grocery store, so it was too late to call a cab and go through all that big fiasco. So, you know, here's what we got on hand, and we just did a show about it because it happens sometimes. You know, you need to throw something together, and you don't, what have I got? Everybody, come listen. Listen to Cooking in the Dark. You're going to dig it. We have a lot of fun.
Tim, let me speak with you for a minute just about kind of how you put together, you know, where Dale and Cheryl have good microphones. It captures the ambiance of their kitchens and yet gives them the hands-free operation to do what they need to do.
It's kind of been an audio evolution. If you go back into the archives and go back to 12 or 13, listen to those shows. If you're an audiophile, you'll just go, ugh. Because back then, Dale was on the phone and we had one of these telephone hybrids that we're using, and Cheryl sounded pretty good. She had a pretty decent mic, but Dale sounded like, you know, on the phone show, I don't know, 60 or 70, we transitioned to Skype, and Dale was using a Skype phone, and that was a little bit better. Dale actually was the one who got the bright idea. He said, I think I can get this really cheapy wireless mic and hook that up to the computer, and then I can walk around the kitchen, and we tried it. The quality of our show, in terms of the audio production, went up about 200%. I mean, I'm using a mixer here. It's so inexpensive. It's a Tapco MX60 6-channel mixer, actually. And Cheryl actually is using, and I just got this for her recently, she wanted a mic and a headset combination, so I got her one of these Beyer DT290, one of the top-rated mic headsets that they use, like, in sportscasting. It sounds great with her voice. It really does. So, you know, we just hook up with Dale on Skype. We record a couple of shows on the computer, and also using, I've got an Eterol R1, so I just run the mixer into that. And then I do all the post-production stuff afterwards. The first show we recorded, I think it took us 3 hours. We bang out an hour-long show in a little more than an hour.
I think the most satisfaction we all get is when we get a note from a listener or somebody, hey, thanks for this, or we heard of a man in Virginia that listens to us there that went back to the VA to learn how to cook. You know, and there's another guy that wrote in that listened to the shows allowed him to get closer to his daughters again, because after he lost his sight, they'd lost that bonding, but now they get in the kitchen together. Sometimes, man, after I go out and I lug all the groceries in and pay the bill and, you know, do all that nonsense, and then we've still got 2 or 3 hours to do a couple shows, and the kitchen's wrecked, and, you know, then after the show's over, you spend all that time cleaning back up. There's sometimes I'm like, man, why are we doing this? You know, and then all of a sudden it just takes one note like that from somebody, and you understand why you're doing it.
So what would you spend on a typical run to a grocery store?
Usually a grocery store run for me is about $350. I probably go twice a month or maybe every 3 weeks. I mean, we've got a big chest freezer, so I try to plan for meals. All right, Monday night we're going to make tacos. Tuesday night we're making this. Wednesday night we're having leftovers. I try to lay out a plan in my head of what we're going to make, and I buy 4 of those meals. And then, of course, the snacks and the quick foods and, you know, and the pinch stuff. The main thing we tell people, get in the kitchen and boil water. But the number of blind and visually impaired people that have not been taught how to cook just blows me away. Very shocking to know that there were that many blind and visually impaired people out there that did not know how to cook.
Well, and because those same people may also not be on the internet, you've networked to get some of your shows, at least on some of the radio information services, so maybe they have an outlet to hear it where they otherwise wouldn't.
We're in several markets that way as well. And, you know, in fact, one of the favorite ladies I talked to is a lady who lives in a trailer up in north of Dallas. And she can't afford the computer or internet, but she has her, you know, her little squawk box from the Reading Radio service up there. And it's about networking. It's about helping each other out. I think that's the biggest thing that I get from the show personally is the knowledge that we're helping somebody.
Now, the biggest issue for podcasters is to derive revenue from their efforts, but I notice you put quite a number of ads in your show. Do you ever get complaints about that, or do you definitely see results when you mention a new product and see the sales move based on mentioning it during the show?
I mean, the ads are there to advertise the product, but more than that, they're there to help make people aware that this product is there, you know, and this is available. Or, hey, have you seen this? Here's a new item. It's kind of a two-fold thing. We're going to keep producing Cooking in the Dark. We have to have the revenue coming in from Blind My Smart, because everything at Blind My Smart that's sold, I don't make any money off of. It didn't go into my pocket or Tim's pocket or Cheryl's pocket or anybody's pocket. It goes back into the blind community in the form of scholarships, and it also goes back in the form of Cooking in the Dark.
We also promote stuff on the show. For example, when they're talking the Hamilton Beach microwave, and Dale wasn't selling that, but we promoted it on the show because it was such a good deal. $80 for a talking microwave compared to, you know, some of the more expensive talking microwaves, that Dale said, look, we got to demo this on the show and let people know about it, even though Blind My Smart's not carrying it.
My competitors, I guess. I mean, they were buying them for $80 and marking them up. What good's that going to do? I mean, yeah, you're going to make some money off of it, but the blind person here sitting at home who's living on a SSDI check, that's on a fixed income, why should they buy it over here from company A at $150 when they can get it from Walmart for $80? Got a couple nasty emails from that, man.
Well, that's what we preach about the blind ghetto, you know, about this markup. Why are blind people paying more?
That's it. I mean, we've got a talking bathroom scale at Blind Mice that I've seen other places normally around $70 to $80. I've even seen it as much as $120 in a big and tall man's catalog. And we sell it for $50. Why? Because we can. You know, the ID mate, we could sell them for more, but why? I can sell it for this and we can make a little profit to help out the scholarships and help out the cooking show and at the same time help get these ID mates in people's hands where they can be useful.
Now talk about your scholarships.
The scholarship program, basically, they're called the Mousehole Scholarships. Every year when we get ready to turn our taxes in to the tax man, we determine what our profit margin was and we set about setting up scholarship awards for students. That's for high school students only, high school seniors graduating, entering college for the first time, and we ask them to write an essay. And then we send the essays out to judges around the country. They judge them. That's how we get our winners. I mean, this year we had 2 $1,250 scholarships and we were also giving away 4 ASUS netbook computers to the scholarship winners. We have a motto at Blind Mice, have a mice day, and the mice stands for make it count every day. No matter what you're doing, man, make it count.
Now, people understand there's a little bit more to the mice, and it's not like a little negative slur or something. I don't know if anyone ever called you on it. Why are you calling Blind Mice? That's negative.
We haven't any problems with that now, yet, but I'm sure we will. We had one person take offense to the Too Much Sex Causes Blindness t-shirts. You gotta have fun and you gotta laugh at yourself, you know? And if you can't do that, it's gonna be a sorry life. If you're disabled or not, or just a blonde, or just... You've gotta laugh.
How do we counter, I know, Dale, you and I talked about this once, these preposterous statements from someone in Florida that said, oh, no, you shouldn't have glass in the kitchen. That's dangerous.
Don't get Dale started.
Something like that, I just like consider the source. That's just the opinion of one person. That's like saying all blind people are stupid. Don't have glass in your kitchen because it's too dangerous. Oh, my gosh. Well, let's get the knives out of here because they're more dangerous than glass. Let's get the burners out of here. They're more dangerous than glass. Yeah, after I heard that, I was in the kitchen. I'm like, golly, got a lot of stuff in here that's glass. I like cooking in glass, you know?
They actually represented an entity that teaches cooking, right?
Yes. Gosh, I'm just so glad that nobody's picked it up and started teaching that at schools for the blind and rehab training centers. That would be preposterous.
Why don't you give the contact information of where they can go to listen to the show and email list and so forth?
If you want to become a member of the email list, first thing you need to do is send me $100. Cheryl, I'm going to get paid one of these days, dadgummit. No, seriously, just send a blank email to cookinginthedark-subscribe@acbradio.org. That's cookinginthedark-subscribe@acbradio.org. For the show itself, the best place to go is the archive page. Now, you guys are archiving us too, right?
Yes.
So they can either go through y'all or the direct link is cookinginthedark, again, no spaces, .libsyn, L-I-B as in boy, S-Y-N as in Nancy, .com, cookinginthedark.libsyn.com.
Link to the podcast feed if any of you listeners want to grab the podcast. cookinginthedark.libsyn.com, LIBSYN.com/RSS in your favorite podcatcher of choice.
And of course, the website for the store, right? BlindMySmart.com?
That's it. BlindMySmart.com. You know, if you're just starting out, we've got a couple great cookbooks at BlindMySmart. One is a three ingredients or less cookbook, and one is easy cooking, and another one's cooking for one or two. They all feature fairly simple recipes with a minimal amount of ingredients. It'll help you learn some different techniques and strategies and cooking.
Well, very good. I want to thank you, Dale, Tim, and Cheryl, for coming on Cero Talk. We'll come on your show sometime, and I know it's a prerequisite that we have to cook, so that should be fun.
That's it. Either cook or just bring the beer.
I am visiting this week with Ricky Inger of Cerotech, and it's great to have you back on Main Menu. This time, we are talking about a new service that you guys have just launched called Accessible Event. Go ahead and tell us about that a little bit.
In its very simple form, Accessible Event is an online accessible meeting platform. In times past, when we have been blind students or blind professionals and we've been in meetings where a presenter has a PowerPoint or spreadsheet or what have you, whether we were sitting in the room or whether we were coming into the meeting from online, we were typically excluded from being able to actually look at the professor's material or the presenter's material. We sort of had to go on what the person was saying, and we didn't have that material to augment the experience. Online classes are becoming far more common, and certainly if you are a part of a corporation, typically meetings will be filled with all sorts of charts and graphs and documents that everybody really needs to look at in addition to hearing what the presenter has to say. So Accessible Event now makes that happen and puts blind people on an equal par with their sighted counterparts. And what happens is that you just use your web browser to log into an Accessible Event meeting. And much like GoToMeeting and Adobe Connect, except it's accessible.
When you launched it, I remember thinking to myself, people aren't really going to understand until later. You know, some things just kind of are in your face and you get it instantly. Do you think that's probably true, that that's one of those things that's kind of grow on people a little bit?
I think you're right, because for two reasons, really. And the first is, unfortunately, I think that we have become accustomed to not being fully included in meetings like this and not being able to take full advantage of the online classroom experience, or even being in a physical classroom where a PowerPoint or something like that is being displayed. So we've sort of become used to not having that capability. And maybe the second reason is this is one of those things that doesn't make sense and doesn't really catch on until you have actually attended a meeting and seen how it works. And you think, oh, wow, yes, I truly do need this type of technology, and it is very much a benefit to me.
From the blind person's perspective, then, it's actually a browser experience, right?
For any browser which has Flash 9 or later installed, this is going to work. Now, typically that means that you would be logging in from a computer, but there are a few portable devices like phones and PDAs that do have Flash 9 or later installed, and you'd be able to log into this event with your meeting code from those devices as well.
That brings up a good point. When you are actually attending a meeting, you go to accessibleevent.com and then you actually enter a code, correct?
That's exactly right. Traditionally, with online meeting platforms, this is exactly how it works. A presenter organizes a meeting. They send out sort of an email announcement to those people that they're going to invite to attend the meeting. That includes the website and a meeting code, which you will enter to be able to attend that event. And in this case, it does happen to be accessibleevent.com, the web address that you'll go to. And then you'll enter the meeting code provided by your presenter.
The browser refreshes. I noticed during the press conference as you guys were talking, when a new slide would come up, the buffer would refresh depending on your screen reader. Definitely the information was right there in front of you. You could read it as you were listening.
That's right. Whenever the presenter updates material, which at this point can be a PowerPoint presentation, a Microsoft Word document, an Excel spreadsheet, or a web page, whenever a presenter updates that in any way, whether it be adding text to a Word document or changing the slide in a PowerPoint presentation or navigating to a different web page or what have you, then that content gets updated. And you review that content, if you are a blind person, with your assistive technology of choice, be that Braille or speech. If it's an Excel spreadsheet, you can navigate that via table navigation because it is presented in your browser, so you'll just use your HTML table navigation features of your screen reader to navigate that. There are sighted people who can certainly benefit from AE. If you're a sighted person, you're just going to see the PowerPoint or the Word document as it is shown on the presenter's side. So it has all of the graphics and things like that that the presenter designed into it. And that, I think, is one thing worth mentioning, that if you are a corporation who has blind and sighted members, you can do one of two things. You can use Accessible Event as a standalone program where your blind and sighted folks log into the same meeting and hear the audio and see the video of the presenter if that's available, and obviously see what's being presented. But a lot of times corporations already have their own meeting solution, and they aren't necessarily interested in saying, okay, you know, we've spent quite a bit of money on this meeting solution, but in order to have accessibility, we've got to go buy something entirely new. That isn't the case with Accessible Event. If you want to continue using your current corporate meeting solution for all the sighted folks, you just send out your invites as you normally would. And for the blind folks who would be attending, you set up the Accessible Event and send them that meeting code. And these meeting programs work alongside each other rather than you're needing to have one or the other.
And I noticed in looking at the website that the pricing structure is very straightforward and very easy to find. There, you could go ahead and actually, if you'd like, just talk about some of the different models. Whether you actually give prices or not is fine. But
sure. We do have a couple of different models, and we've kind of divided it into a personal model and a corporate model. With the personal model, you are able to have a meeting with five people in attendance, and you can purchase that in a day pass. You can do it monthly or you can do it yearly. And the same is true for the corporate model. You can have a day pass as well with that, and you can also purchase it monthly or yearly. So regardless of the size of meeting that you want to have and the frequency of meetings that you think you're going to have, we think we've got a structure that's really going to work for all of those types of scenarios. And if you need more than 25 people, we do have the ability to upgrade the number of attendees that you're going to have. Just as an example of pricing for $9.95 a day for a personal day pass or $14.95 for a corporate day pass, it's very easy to just come in and take it for a test drive. You're not going to break the bank just to see how this is going to work. So if you've got future meetings that you want to try out and see how Accessible Event works for that, very easy to log in and purchase via PayPal, or obviously you can call Saratech as well, and we'll be happy to sign you up.
Well, it sounds very straightforward. It sounds very easy. I'm assuming that from the presenter's point of view, the controls are quite easy and quite straightforward.
We have made an effort to make this the least invasive type of program. So just as with anything else Saratech does, we don't want to leave anything behind on the presenter's computer. So they've got just a little program that they download. It runs in the background, and they're able to configure things on the initial launch of the program, such as, do I want to be able to accept questions via text or audio, video? And if they do allow for that, then attendees will have the opportunity to ask a question, and they'll be presented with the ability to do that via audio or video. They can also do things like enable live voice chat, which kind of opens it up for a little more roundtable experience, or less formal, I suppose, experience, where attendees can sort of break in at any time and say, oh, wait, I have a question. Whereas with just the ability to send a question, it's at the presenter's discretion whether to accept that question right then or to discard it until they're ready to receive questions. Once the presenter runs the host program, it stays in the background. It has a context menu there in the system tray, which can be activated, and various configuration options chosen. And when the presenter's done, they simply shut down the Accessible Event host, and it goes away as if it had never been there.
Would you like to give us some actual real-world examples of how this has been used so far?
I was able to do a presentation to a group who was all the way in Texas, and I'm here in North Carolina. I had a PowerPoint presentation that I wanted to show not only that group who was there in the room and were able to log in with their computers or PDAs, but they had people who were unfortunately unable to attend the conference and still wanted to get that information. So I, as the presenter, came in, showed my PowerPoint, and people from everywhere, not just in this one town in Texas, were able to come in, see that presentation, and ask questions both from within the room and from outside the conference that was being held. Several people have done that very thing, where they had state conventions. They had people who weren't able to attend, unfortunately, but they still wanted to offer the presenters from those conventions. They wanted to give people the chance to look at those presenters and ask questions, and it worked out nicely.
Is there anything else that you think we need to mention or talk about before we wrap up?
Again, that's www.accessibleevent.com. Very easy to sign up and take it for a test drive, and I think that you're all going to like it enough to keep coming back again and again. If you have any questions about Accessible Event, there is a user's guide and frequently asked questions on the website, or you can give us a call at Saratech at 866-202-0520, and we're happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Today's special guest on this podcast is David Przinski. David is a massage therapist. And Dave, tell us about your business, the name of it, and exactly what you do here.
The name of the company is Back to Business. We have two locations. One is at Countryside Mall, where we have chair massage. And here we do anywhere from 10 minutes to 30 minutes of massage work, primarily upper body work for neck, shoulders, back, arms, hands, all upper body work. And then we also have a full service office just inside Dunedin on Heather Ridge Boulevard, where we do more serious work for people who have injuries or are healing from various disorders of one kind or another that massage will help with. We've been here for 12 years. So far, we are planning on being here for many more to come. It's all been very, very productive and very rewarding 12 years for us in both places.
And for the benefit of our podcast listeners, we're actually talking to you from Clearwater, Dunedin, Florida, which is Central Florida. What inspired you to get into massage therapy?
Actually, I spent a good 20 years practicing psychotherapy. I'm a clinical psychologist, and after I finished my doctoral work and managed healthcare really became a problem in the mental health field, it was time to retire. If it gets to a point of ethical dilemma that's uncomfortable, I just don't want to do it anymore, and in mental health, managed healthcare kind of put it all at the bottom of the barrel. So it was time to look for something new. And it was a classic case of being at the right place at the right time. So I just shifted from the head to the body. And that's how I got interested in doing massage and literally fell into this opportunity, again, right place at the right time, after I finished the curriculum for massage school and take my Florida license.
In that transition, was it difficult to move from behavioral into the physical? And if so, what type of training did you have to take to make that transition?
It was very difficult in my entire life, in all the work that I did, in all of the education that I had. It was abstract. Most of psychology is abstract material. When you switch to a field like massage therapy, it's all about your body. So it becomes concrete. And I was literally terrified, PhD and all. I didn't know if processing all of that material was going to work, if I would have the capability to do the memorization that's involved and to shift gears into a very concrete, specific curriculum. The training is very, very difficult. It's a limited period of time with a great deal of material stuffed into that limited period of time. So the studying, the practicing, the hours in the classroom, the hours in the clinic, it was a very difficult curriculum, and massage school is. So the passion from the very beginning to learn about how the body functions, the pathology of the body, what to do to work on improving an injury or a situation, the passion for working with the human body has to be there, because it's a very, very demanding school.
Due to the demands and the difficulty, would you encourage other blind folks to consider this as a career path?
Absolutely. If you are comfortable with learning and you have the commitment to do what it takes with the curriculum, it's not that it is brutally difficult material. The volume is the problem. So if you are comfortable with spending the hours it takes to get the volume of work completed, I would absolutely recommend it and encourage it. It's been very, very good to me. It's not an easy field to be in. It's no different than any other field. When you graduate and you get your license, like anything else, you start from zero and you build it from there. So it's a challenge. It's not that it is easy. It's not a get-rich-quick profession. But it is certainly a profession that is growing. In the 12 years that I've been here, I've seen a rather remarkable shift moving more and more toward the rehabilitation medical model rather than what massage used to be considered. It's not the fluff work that it was a lot of years ago that was considered something to pamper yourself with. People use massage now when they have a car accident or if they have a disorder of one kind or another that affects muscle tissue. So it's very specific work now. It's not just that spa kind of for rich folks only thing. Everybody uses it. And it's one of the advantages of being here that it becomes available to people who might not ever be comfortable doing a full body massage first, or who might be on a fixed income and they couldn't afford to do a full hour at our office, but they can come for 10 minutes or 15 minutes and it helps them.
David, there are two facets of your business that you kind of mentioned briefly earlier. One of them here at the mall is chair massage, and the other is more specific injury-related type massage. Am I correct on that?
Well, there are people that come here to the mall, too, for specific injuries or specific problems. But what usually happens is we'll meet people here, and they'll try 15 minutes or 20 minutes to see if it's helpful to whatever pain they might be having, or if it's helpful with the headaches that they're getting. And if they feel better after that 15 or 20 minutes here in the chair, then oftentimes they'll come to the office for more serious work than what we can do out here in the middle of the fishbowl. And we'll come schedule an hour's appointment or a 90-minute appointment so that we can do more intense work to help them feel better.
I know this may sound like a silly question to some, but I'm curious. Here in the mall, how do you tell when a customer comes up, and are there misgivings by that customer when they do find out, hey, this gentleman is blind?
I've been here for 12 years, and at this point, we're not the best-kept secret anymore. It used to be that every single week, we would have people say, we never knew that you were here, but we're not the best-kept secret anymore. So people will usually just come up and say hello and introduce themselves, plus the fact that I've got my yellow lab here. So that's a great big clue, and people obviously know that I don't have vision. To answer your other question, is that I never once had a problem like that in the years that we've been here. Never once have I had somebody be resistant or unwilling to sit in my chair.
What kind of learning curve would one have in the preparation? Is it a 2-year degree, 4-year degree, or is it more intense?
It's much more intense than that. Most places have 6 or 9 month programs. If you complete in 6 months, you're pretty much in the classroom 7 to 8 hours a day. 9 months is a little bit easier because it's maybe 4 to 5 hours of classroom work every day, so the volume isn't quite as heavy. But what you have to learn in either the 6 or 9 month program is a great, great deal of material, followed by the licensure. And the licensure exam in Florida is actually the national certification exam, and it is challenging. The reality is that you either know your material or you don't to pass that. And that's all part of getting your license and then starting from zero.
Beyond the basic physiology and anatomy, are there areas of specialization that you can go into and learn about as a massage therapist?
Absolutely. If somebody would have told me when I was in massage school that this is what I was going to do for my whole career, I truly would have recommended some heavy medication for them. It definitely was anything that crossed my mind, but there are many different modalities that you can do. Even at my office, for example, I specialize in craniosacral therapy, which is a completely different modality than traditional deep tissue massage. We also do hot stone massage, we do bar shiatsu, we do the hot bamboo fusion massage. There's a lot of different options to use depending on what interests you. And that also includes, where do you want to work? Do you want to work in a rehabilitation facility or with a chiropractor? Or do you want to open your own practice? Or do you want to work in a day spa setting? And they're still there. There are day spas that are still there where people might go for hair and nails and massage, you know, the pamper me kind of days. So there are therapists who have that particular interest. That's perfectly okay too. So when somebody goes to school, all of those choices are available. And it also leads you to the school that you want to go to, because some of them are very strong in one area, and this other school prepares you for a different career path. So researching the curriculum of the school is important too.
To our audience, they're listening to this interview and they're intrigued, and they're asking, how in the world do I get started? What would you say to them?
First thing is to be very, very clear that you have a very active, a very deep, a very passionate interest in the human body. If that doesn't exist, don't go any further. This is not a profession that will get you rich quick. It is not a profession that is easy on your body. And it is very hard work. In the 12 years that I've been here, I've had 3 major surgeries, all related to doing this work, to rotator cuff tears and neck surgery. The very first part is, do you have that passion for body work? If the answer to that is yes, then you start to research the schools and you find out all the important information that, of course, include their tuition, but the program itself. What's in the curriculum? Is this going to prepare me to do therapeutic work that would fit in a chiropractor's office? What are they heavy in? How's their curriculum built? So I recommend to anybody that's going to go to massage school, go to all of them in the area. Interview them. Have them tell you what you're going to be doing in their classes. Have them show you their classrooms, their facilities, and compare every single school so that you're making a prepared and an educated choice about where you want to study. When you go to massage school, it's a once-in-a-lifetime event. You're not going to go to massage school 3 or 4 times. So you want to make sure that you're going to enjoy yourself while you're there, and that you're going to be comfortable and just have a wonderful experience along with the realities of the stress that's involved. It's the curriculum is difficult, so you have to prepare yourself for all of those things before you walk in the door. If it's not enjoyable, you're not going to make it through because the stress is just too demanding.
For folks who want to learn more about you, David, or who want to learn more about just general aspects of massage therapy, mm-hmm. do you have contact information, websites that people can go to and take a look at?
We do. Our website is yourbackourbusiness.com, and our office phone number in Dunedin is 727-736-9288. And I am always available and very, very happy to talk with people at length if they would like to come and see our facilities and even have a massage. I never had a massage before I went to massage school. That's where I started, and I'm always available for spending that kind of time with people. I particularly enjoy hiring people who are blind and visually impaired because it's a way for me to give back and to share what the profession has been for me. So anybody that wants to call and come and visit, please do.
And we'll have all the information up on serotalk.com on the show notes for folks who want to take a look at those. David, thank you so much for taking the time this afternoon to be with us. And we want to just encourage folks to take a look at this as a possible career alternative. And we thank you for listening to the Serotalk Career Podcast.
You've been listening to Serotalk. Visit us at www.serotalk.com. Send us an email at resources@serotalk.com or leave us a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB-2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us in 2 weeks as we explore all the internet and life has to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life.